Okay, we're beginning here, 11 lines down on Chav Chet Amar Aleph. The Gemara is continuing to discuss this theme of B'meh Herachta Yamim. What was the schut by which you think that you merited to a long life? Shalu Talmid David Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. So the students asked Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, B'meh Herachta Yamim. In what schut did you have a longer life? Samar Lehem, Mi Amai Lo Nitkabarti B'Klon Chavirai. I never took honor in the downfall or the difficulties, the embarrassment of my friend. Velo altal mitati klalat chaveri, and I never had a curse for my friend on my bed. Uvatran bimoni hayiti, and I was very generous with my money. And the Gemara is going to go through each one of them. And in each instance, you have to ask the question. You can see Tosafot over here asked the question a number of times. But the question you have to ask is, what did they do that was unusual? If they're just keeping a mitzvah, then there's nothing exceptional about it. Everybody's required to keep a mitzvah. We have to assume here that whatever they're doing is lifnim mishurat adin. It's something that's beyond the letter of the law. And so that's what we have to figure out. In some of these instances, it's not clear what it means that they were beyond the letter of the law. And this is one of them, which is, lo nitkabadati b'klon chaveri. I never took honor or benefit from the shame, the downfall, the difficulties of my friend. Ki had Rav Huna. For example, the instance with Rav Huna, Dari Mara Akatfe, he was carrying a spade, a hoe on his shoulder. Ato Rav Chana Bar Chanilai Vekadori Mine. He came along and he took it off of him. He said, look, this is the great Rav Huna. I'm going to help him out. I'm going to take the spade. I'm going to take the hoe on his behalf. I'm like, Irigilat Didarit Bematich. If you go do this in your own city, meaning that you would normally carry this type of utensil on your back in your own city, Dari, then take it here. Velo, if that's not the case, meaning that at home you wouldn't do this, Lo yakure ana biziluta didach. I'm not going to get kavod in your denigration or in your lowering your standards over here. Because lo nechali, I don't feel comfortable having you diminish your honor in any way in order to benefit me. So here you see this idea through Rav Huna, which is Rav Huna was unwilling to have someone else help him, even though it befit Rav Huna to have someone else carry the spade or carry the hoe. Nevertheless, when it was someone like Rabbi Chana Bar Chanilai, who could also be beneath his dignity to take the hoe or the spade, he was unwilling to have Rabbi Chana Bar Chanilai lower his standards or to do something beneath his dignity in order to give kavod to Rav Huna, even though he was deserving of it, even though he was greater than Rav Chana Bar Chanilai. Nevertheless, he did not feel comfortable that someone else would take the burden of lowering their standards or lowering their dignity for his benefit. So that's one possibility of describing or explaining over here what was the lifnim mishurat adin, which was, even though Mikar adin, he was the gadol ador, Mikar adin, he did deserve to have this lifted off of him and have someone else do it. But nevertheless, if he felt that it was pogeya in the kavod, the honor of this other individual, he was unwilling to take that benefit by having someone else get hurt or lower their standards. So this is also, I would say, almost the antithesis of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is exactly being nitkabadati b'klon chaverai, that a person takes honor, uplifts themselves through the denigration or through the ruin of someone else. That's what Lashon Hara is. This is the opposite of that, which is that a person's unwilling to take any benefit or to see any personal gain from that which happens to someone else or that which befalls someone else, or more importantly, what someone else does so that it should benefit you. They're unwilling to accept that, unwilling to have that happen. So that is the first thing Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana said, which is, Mi'amai lo nitkabadati b'klon chaveri. Right, because the Gemara has Shalu Talmidav at Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. They had the answers that Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana had. They didn't have stories directly about Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. What they do have is stories that they're familiar with are the stories of the Amoraim. So they bring examples for the Amoraim to describe or explain the statements of the Tana. They didn't have the personal stories of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. They just had the statements of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. And you're going to see that a couple of times here. The next thing is, V'lo altal mitati klalat chaveri. And when I got onto my bed, I never had a curse for my friend. Ki hada marzutra. Like the example of marzutra. Ki hava salik de purye. When he used to get onto his bed, climb into his bed at night, amar. Sharele mare lechoman de tzaron. I forgive anyone who caused me distress, anguish, grief over the day. That's the equivalent of some of the hamapils have beforehand, a ribono shel olam. Then the kriyat shema lamita, the ribono shel olam basically says something similar, which is, I basically forgive everybody who offended me today. I forgive anybody who wronged me in any way. And it's a mida tova that a person at night relinquishes or releases all those people that might have wronged him, so they doesn't bear a grudge, he doesn't carry that overnight. He doesn't curse anybody because he lets it all go. He lets it fall away, and he forgives. And then the last one is uvatran b'mamoni hayiti. I was very generous with my money. Damar mar. Iyov vatran b'mamoni hava. Iyov himself was very generous with his money. Sheminiach pruta lechenvani mimamoni. That he used to leave over a pruta to the chenvani from his money. It's actually a gemara in Baba Batra that discusses this. And there it gives a little more detail about it. Rashi over there suggests that he basically left the change. He didn't collect the change. If he gave a half a pruta, instead of giving the pruta and waiting for the change, he says keep the change. That he would leave the change with that individual. The assumption being that we're talking about individuals where he left the change were individuals who could use the money. That people who would be beneficiaries would be aniim, something of that sort, that he was very generous in giving to them, or he didn't take this change, so they ended up gaining more than they should have. And that's what the Vatran b'mani hayiti, that I was very generous, and I gave to others of my money. I benefited others through my money. All right, so now, Sha'al Rabbi Akiva et Rabbi Nechunya Agadol, b'me'arachte yamim. How did you merit a long life? Atu gavze. All of a sudden, come flying in there, his servants, those that are accompanying, take care of Rabbi Nechunya HaGadol, their sarisim, become machule, and they start hitting Rabbi Akiva, pushing him away. Salik yati v'resha d'diklos. He leaves and climbs up a palm tree to get out of their way, and sits on the top of a palm tree. Why did they come and hit him? Why were they pushing him away? Because they felt that the question was inappropriate, and that the question underlied a certain ayin hara, or a question about, aren't you just too old already? Which is, b'me'arachta yamim, why did you live such a long life? As if to ask, your end has come. Why are you given so much time? And they saw that as a negative statement rather than a positive statement as to, I want to understand in what merit that you lived a long life, rather than just simply asking, why did you live so long? Why are you living so long? To imply that maybe you shouldn't be living so long. So then he sits up on the tree. Also just note here, there's an interesting Gemara in Kiddushin, Samach Aleph in Kiddushin, towards the end of Kiddushin. There the Gemara has stories about Tanaim that used to make fun of the Satan, or they used to poke fun of people who sinned. And over there, there's a story about Rabbi Akiva, who made fun of the Satan, or made fun of people that were over Avera. So the Satan says, you know, I'm going to get him back. So the Satan dresses up like this beautiful woman, goes up the top of a palm tree. And Rabbi Akiva goes flying up the palm tree after her. So another instance where Rabbi Akiva climbed up a palm tree. Seems to be that Rabbi Akiva does that here in our story there, as well as the story in the Gemara in Kiddushin. So just interesting that you have two stories that have Rabbi Akiva climbing up a palm tree. Amalei Rabbi. So Rabbi Akiva then poses a question to Rabbi Nechunya Gadol. Im ne'mar keves, lama ne'mar achad? If it says keves, then why does the pasuk say achad? Now, truthfully, you can quote this from two places. Because the Korban HaTamid is mentioned both in Parshat Tetzaveh as well as in Parshat Pinchas. What you see here is quoted from Parshat Pinchas because here it does not have the Hei Yediyah on the word Echad. So it says, if it says Keves, then obviously Echad, it's the first Keves. Because the Pasuk says, Keves HaSheni, the second Keves. So if there's a second Keves, then the first one that you mentioned is obviously the Keves Echad. So why did the Torah also mention the word Echad? Amalu Tzurba Midirabonon Hu. Shavkua. So Rabbi Nechunya Gadol says, this guy is a young whippersnapper, Talmud Chacham, leave him alone. So they recognize from his question that he was a Talmud Chacham, and that his question might have been appropriate or wasn't to be interpreted negatively. So Amar Leih, now Rabbi Nechunya Gadol answers the question. He says, Echad means miyuchad shebe'edro. Echad does not mean one or the first, rather means miyuchad, the distinguished, the best of his flock. And that's what it means, Echad. miuchad instead of being one, which also means like to be first, means to be the unique or to be designated. So over here also, so echad here means miuchad shebe edro, and that's how he explains the word echad. Amalei. So now he answers the question, bameh hirachta yamim. Number one, miyamai lo kibalti matanot. I never accepted gifts. V'lo amadati al midotai. I did not stand on my honor. Uvatran b'mamoni hayiti. And I was also very generous with my money. Lo kibalti matanot. I did not accept gifts. Kehadu Rabbi Elazar. Like the story of Rabbi Elazar. Gavu mishadrele matanot mibay nasiya. They used to send gifts from the house of the nasi. Lo havishakil. He refused to accept them. Kavu mizamnile. When they used to invite him over to come and eat by them or to spend time with them. Lo havazil. He refused to go. Amalu lo nechalu de'echye. What, you guys don't want me to live a long life? Dichtiv, sone matanot yichya. Someone who hates gifts lives a long life. You guys keep trying to gift me, you keep trying to invite me over, you're trying to kill me. So he says, that's why I'm going to refuse. I refuse to take any gifts. Rabbi Zeira, kiavi mishadrule mi bei nisiya. So Rabbi Zeira had a slightly different tact, which is when they used to send stuff from the Beit HaNasi to him, lo avashakil, that he did not accept. Kiavi mizamnile, when they used to invite him over, azil. Then he would go, Amar, ityakure demityakre bi. They're actually the beneficiaries of me showing up. Meaning that they are honored by my presence. There's a Gemara like this in Kiddushin with regards to the fact that in order to be Mikadesh Nisha, in order to marry a woman, you need some sort of value or consideration to give the woman in order to affect the Kiddushin. So normally we give a pruta. So you give a pruta to the woman, and through the giving of the pruta to the woman and the statement of Hariat Mikudeshet Li Betabat Zu, then you can be Mitkadesh, the woman, through that value of a pruta, through the object that you use in order to Mitkadesh the Isha. So the Gemara over there gives an example of an individual who is a great man, and the woman comes and grants a gift to this individual, whether it's, say, it's the president, it's the king, and she gives him a gift, and he accepts the gift. So the Gemara there says that hana, that the individual grants the woman by accepting the gift, he can marry her with that hana. That with that hana, because there is a certain amount of joy, elation, experience that you have when you grant a gift to someone who is special, unique, of a high stature, and they accept it. So that's the same thing that Rabbi Zeir was saying over here. As far as them gifting me things, I refuse to accept the gifts. As far as me going over there, inviting me to come and eat there, when I go and eat there, it's not that they're doing me a favor, but rather I'm doing them a favor, because now I'm honoring them with my presence. So it's as if I'm giving to them rather than taking from them. And because of that, he was willing to go over to the Beit Nasi to eat. And again, it's very similar to what I just described in the Gemara in Kiddushin, that you can generate value through accepting a gift rather than simply by giving a gift. Alright, now the next thing that he said that he did was, Lo amadati al midotai. I didn't stand on my ground. Tamarava, kol amavir al midotav. Any person who does not hold a grudge, that is forgiving in their manner, mavir mimenu kol pishav. Then we remove for him all iniquity. Shinamar. So here's the pasuk. We actually did this in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah as well as Yoma. And there the grudge changes the girsa. The girsa that we have in our Gemara is, Shinamar nosei avon v'aver al pesha. The mi nosei avon, the mi shover al pesha. Who does Hashem dismiss their sins? The mi shover al pesha, to the one who overlooks wrongdoing to them. That's the way that we have in an argument. If you look in the Gra down below, he says that it's the other way around. The mi over al pesha, the mi shover al avon. Who does Hashem pass over, overlook their pesha? Is the person who is nosei avon, the one who carries their sin, meaning that they don't take retribution. They don't take revenge. They don't bear grudges. They let it fall off their shoulders. So those individuals are midah keneged midah, that Hashem is also soft on them, goes easy on them. So here you see, first of all, that a person is mavir midotav, Hashem is mavir menu kol pishav. It's a midah keneged midah. Hashem is able to reflect. This is true in general. The way that we act, Hashem will act towards us. There the Gemara said in Tanit that when Rabbi Akiva was answered, it says, Lo mipnei shezeh gadol mizeh. Not because this one's greater than this one, but rather, the reason that Rabbi Akiva was answered is because he was mavir al midotav. This is a tremendous midah. It's not an easy midah. but it's one by which if people are forgiving and people do not bear grudges and people let things slide off, then again, Hashem will react or act towards them in the same manner. And he'll give them much more leeway in terms of punishment and their sins. Or maybe in a sense, the fact that they were offended and they let it go, that is their punishment. Because they don't take revenge, they don't bear a grudge. And the punishment in the sense is that they were offended, somebody offended them. And so they're, by doing that, their whole punishment is that item, and they don't need any more punishment for any sin that they have done. Shal Rabbi et Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. Rabbi asked Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, b'me'er achta yamim. Same question, by what did you merit a long life? I'm like, katzte b'chayai. You're not happy with me living a long life? You want me to get rid of me? Why are you asking this question? As if it's too much already. Samarlo, Rabbi, Torah, hiyulu limod anitzarich. No, it's Torah, I want to understand it. I'm not questioning why you live so long. I'm not saying to you, you've lived long enough. I'm just saying to you, I want to understand by what zchut, what merit did you live a long life? So I'm like, miyamai lo nistakalti midmut adam rasha. I never looked at an individual who was a rasha. Dam Rabbi Yochanan asur adam nistakel b'tzelem dmut adam rasha. Person may not look at the figure, the face of an individual who is evil. Shenemar, the pasuk says, by Elisha in the beginning of Melachim Bet, when Melech Yudah, Melech Yisrael, Melech Edom are going out to battle, and Elisha shows up there and he's not happy to be there because Yehoram, Melech Yisrael, is not a very nice person. He's following the footsteps of his father Achav, and Yehoshaphat, who is the Melech Yudah, is much better, and Elisha comes because of Yehoshaphat. And when he gets there, he says this, Lulei Pnei Yehoshaphat, Melech Yudah, Ani Noseh, was it not for the fact that I'm coming to grant honor or to give respect to the face of Yehoshaphat, the king of Judah, imabit alecha v'merecha. I wouldn't have looked at you, I wouldn't have even seen you. Elisha is saying to the Melech Yisrael, to Yehoram, that I wouldn't have looked at you at all, because you're an ish rasha. You see from here that you're not allowed to look at an ish rasha. Here you have another machloket, you can see that the Kiveger brings down the Magen Avraham, who is midayek from the word lehistakel, b'tzelem d'mut adam. It's the difference between ri'yah and lehistakel. He claims that ri'yah is a cursory glance. Lehistakel is to ponder, to look in a extended gaze at the individual. And so the Magen Avraham claims that davka lehistakel bo biyoter ulehitbonei, to look at him for a long duration, and lehitbonein bo b'tzalmo b'dmuto, aval ri'yah v'al mashori, just a quick glance, that is mutar. So now that might also relate to two questions here. The first question is, what exactly is the problem? So how do you have this machloket, whether the histakel means a cursory glance even, or it means it has to be a directed gaze. That's what the Magen Avraham says, a directed gaze. The second question is, what did he do here? Rabbi Yochanan just said it's a sur, l'adam l'histakel b'tzalem d'mut adam rasha. So if that's what Rabbi Shua ben Karcha did, he was just doing the letter of the law. He's not looking at these individuals. So what you have to suggest is that every individual, you always have Rishayim walking around, and it's impossible not to get a cursory glance of a rasha when you're walking around. So that might be the problem. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha was so makpid that he always looked down. On the other hand, you could suggest the isur is l'histakel, like the Magen Avraham suggests, which means to gaze steadily at the individual. But a cursory glance would not be problematic. And Rabbi Shua ben Karcha was even makpid on a cursory glance. He would not look at a rasha even in a cursory manner. It's actually brought down by the Shach in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid that when a judge has the Bali Dinim in front of him, he should not look directly at the Bali Dinim. He should look down. Because the Mishnah in Avot says, Kishiyu Bali Dinim Omdim Lefanecha, Yu Benecha Ke Rishayim. That when the Bali Dinim are standing before you, you have to look at them as if they are Rishayim. Well, if they're Rishayim, you're not allowed to look at them. So based on that, he suggests that the judge should not look directly at the Bali Dinim during the adjudication, because they are, quote-unquote, Rishayim. And here we see, you're not allowed to look at a Rasha. Rabbi Lezer Amar Inav Kehot, that a person looks at a Rasha, his eyes are dimmed by that, Shinemar. But he kazakein Yitzchak, as Yitzchak ages, v'tichena Inav Mirot, his eyes dim from being able to see. Why? Mishum distakel be'esav Rasha, because he had been looking his whole life at Esav. So that's what caused this premature loss of sight, or deterioration in his eyesight. Mar says, v'ha garmele? That's what caused him to lose his eyesight? The curse of a layperson should not be taken lightly. The same opposite is true. The Gemara brings down to Alte Birkate Jod Kalabeinacha. Don't let the blessing of a layperson be light to you. So here we have a curse of a hejot. Shari Avimelech kilelet Sarah. Avimelech cursed Sarah, v'nitkayim bizarah. And it came true. Shinamar, v'nehu lach kisuteinayim. Avimelech says, after he took Sarah for the night, and then he returns her in the morning, he gives all these gifts to Abraham. And he turns to Sarah and says, v'nehu lach kisuteinayim. He is to you a covering of the eyes, meaning that it will be clear that nothing happened or nothing transpired here, and I was forced to give you back, because I ended up having to gift your husband, Abraham, all this material. So this will be evidence of the fact that k'suteinayim, it will cover your eyes, and then this will make it clear that I did this against my will. So when it says, al tikre k'sut el k'siateinayim, don't call it a k'suteinayim, but rather a k'siateinayim, a removal of the eyes, or a covering, a complete diminishment of the eyes. And so that's what the Gemara says here, that curse of Avimelech, that you should lose your eyesight, or your eyesight should be dimmed, came true in her son Yitzchak. So my answer is Havah Garmile, that both of those were contributing factors, both the fact that he looked at Esav, as well as the fact that the curse of Avimelech, this is the same that we just saw back on Chaf Bet Amud Bet at the bottom of the Daf. We saw the story by Levi, Achve Kida, Lifnei Rabbi. Levi did a Kida, that unusual type of push up on his thumbs that caused him to get hurt or injured. He injured his thigh there, and then he had to limp afterwards. So Gemara says, well, he did this dangerous maneuver, and all the pressure is in his hips, and that's what caused the injury. Gemara says in Tanit that he got the injury because he said something that wasn't so respectful, Galabe Shemayo. He said to Hashem, wait, Hashem, did you go to sleep? You forgot about us? Because they were looking for the rain to come, and he was turning to Hashem to say, like, where are you? Why aren't you here to give us rain? And so since he spoke in such a manner, which might have been a little too inappropriate, Gemara said he was punished that he ended up limping. Gemara says, what do you mean? And it's because he did that dangerous maneuver. Gemara answers up, Hava Garmile, that both of those were the cause. They were jointly the cause of his injury. So to over here by Yitzchak, the loss of his eyesight was caused by both of these items. Rava Amar Mihocha, Rava says, we learn this principle out from here. Se'et p'nei rasha lo tov. To give honor, respect to the face of the Rasha is not good. So that's why you shouldn't look at the Rasha. You shouldn't give a certain amount of respect or patronize the countenance of the Rasha, because that's something that is lo tov. It's not good for you. B'shat p'tirato. When Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was going to pass away, so Rabbi, who before had asked him about b'me harachta yamim, now he comes along and he says to him, Rabbi Barcheni, please give me a bracha. Amalei, here at Sonsha, degia de chatzi yamai. You should live half as long as I did. Rabbi's shocked. What do you mean? Well, the kululo, why can't I live as long as you? Why are you telling me I can only live up to half your lifetime? Amalo, habayim acharecha behema yiru. Those that come after you, they're going to be shepherds. They're going to be watching animals. So he says, you have a problem. You're the nasi. And since you're the nasi, you're in a position of leadership. Your children, who are going to inherit your position, if you live a very long life, then basically they will remain lay people for their entire lives. They will never get the opportunity to step in to the position of leadership. So what I'm saying to you is that you should live a nice long life, but you shouldn't live too long, because if you live too long, it's going to impact your children. So if you pass away at a nice time, a nice age, then your children will have their opportunity to become the nasi, and they won't just be out, behema yiru, they won't just be out watching the flocks, raising the flocks. Avu bar ihi, uminyamin bar ihi, two brothers. You should give me reward because I never looked at a kuti. I never entered into a partnership with a kuti. So each of them is suggesting that they deserved harachat yamim or some sort of reward for acting lifnei mishurat hadin. One of them says that I never looked at a kuti, meaning that he never looked at the pnei rasha, similar to what Rabbi Shua ben Karcha had said, which is mayamai lo niskalti bitmut adam rasha. And the other one said, no, I never made a partnership with a kuti. What's the problem making a partnership with a kuti? So Tosafot over here asked the question and says, well, nobody's allowed to make a partnership with the kuti. So Gemara discusses the problem of shvua, that you might end up having to take a shvua in order to resolve business differences when you're in partnership. And that shvua is going to involve this individual taking a shvua in the name of his deity. And because of that, he's actually going to engage Avodah Zarah or take a Shvuah b'shem Avodah Zarah, and it's going to be your fault because you're the one who triggered the Shvuah. You're the one who's going to demand it. So we discourage you from getting involved in partnerships like this that are going to require you to take a Shvuah. So Tosfot says, if that's the case, then it applies to everybody. Why does he want to say that I did this? You should grant me reward because I did this. So Tosfot says it's in a case where he gave him a waiver. He didn't have to take a Shvuah at all. Nevertheless, he still didn't want to get into a partnership with him because he didn't want to be lumod bimasav. He didn't want to learn from his ways. Because the more exposure, the more time he spent with him, he might actually learn from this individual, and that wouldn't have been proper. So he didn't want to get involved with the partnership for it, not the halachic reason, which is the problem of Shvuah. Shalu Talmid David Rabbi Zeira. The Talmidim asked Rabbi Zeira, B'meh rachta yamim? Where were you zuchet to have such a long life from? Amar lahem, I'll give you a long list. Miyamai lo ikbadati b'toch beiti. I never spoke harshly, I never got angry within my house. V'lo tza'ati b'fnei misha gadol mimeni. I never walked in front of someone who was of a higher stature than me. V'lo hirharti m'va'ot an metunafot. I never thought divrei Torah in places where it was dirty, where it was improper to learn Torah. So over here again, if this is the halacha, then what would he do if he was just keeping the halacha? So you have to give one of two explanations here. Either one is that he holds like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan we saw earlier who says that you can continue to say Kriyat Shema in the Mevaot HaMetunafot. It doesn't restrict you. And he, even though he held like Rabbi Yochanan, was still Makpid or held himself to a higher standard and did not learn Torah Mevaot HaMetunafot. Or you can suggest here that it says Vohir Harti. The Hirhur, which technically could be Mutar, learning Torah, articulating Torah is problematic in the Mevaot HaMetunafot. But Hirhur might have been Mutar. So there he says, but your hearty is, even that I didn't do. I didn't even think divrei Torah when I was in a place that it was inappropriate to be learning Torah. Below alachti dalet amot, below Torah, below tefillin. I never walked more than dalet amot without Torah, as Rashi says, reviewing my girsa, reviewing my mishnayot. I was always doing that. And number two is I was always wearing tefillin. By the way, a list is similar to the list that Rabbi Yochanan gives about himself also. As to why he was zochei, he also says the same thing. Lo alachti d'amot below Torah below tefillin. Lo yeshanti bebeit midrash, and I did not sleep in the beit midrash. Lo shinat keva, velo shinat arai. Not a full-fledged sleep, and not just a little nap or dozing off. So even though, as we're going to see that by a beit midrash, it is permissible for a talmid chacham to fall asleep there or to rest there, nevertheless, he did not take advantage of that dispensation and refused to sleep in the beit midrash because he felt it was pogei on the kavod of beit midrash. Velosasti b'takalat chaverai, I did not rejoice at the downfall or the misfortunes of my chaveri, of my friend. Velo karati l'chaveri, and over here there's a question about the girsa as to which is which, whether it's lo karati l'chaveri b'hachachinato, v'amila, and some say b'hanichato. And the difference being, it's a nickname. As Rashi notes over here, there's two different types of nicknames. It's a nickname of an individual himself, which is a negative nickname. There's also a nickname that's given to the individual from his family. It's a negative nickname associated with the family. So I wouldn't use any of these nicknames with regards to these individuals. Not one that was disparaging, negative on the individual himself, and not one where it was negative on his mishpacha, on his family. So over here, there are a number of items which you have to ask about what the chiddush is. The first one is, velo sasti b'takalat chaveri. I never rejoiced in the misfortunes of my friend. So that's a gemara that we learned before, which is, b'mfolo ivecha al tismach. When your enemies fall, you're not allowed to rejoice. That's your enemies. Your friends, certainly you can't rejoice in their misfortunes. So what was such a great thing that velo sasti b'takalat chaveri, that I didn't rejoice in the mistakes or the difficulties of my friend? So there are those that suggest that obviously he didn't make it clear that he thought it was wonderful that this person was having difficulty, but it might have been that he felt that way, that sometimes a person feels like he got his due, like he was giving me such a hard time, he deserved this. So even though you may not articulate it, you may not say it, but you might feel it inside of you. So that's what it says, velo sasti b'takalat chaveri, that even in my heart, I did not feel that way. I did not rejoice at the difficulties of my friends. Or another possibility is Vosasti Vitakalat Chaveri is that I was able to feel the pain of others. So when someone else was in pain because of the difficulties and misfortunes that came upon them, Losasti, I wasn't able to be excited anymore. I wasn't able to be happy anymore because I felt for those difficulties that they have. Now, as far as the nicknames are concerned, we saw also Tosafot discuss the issue of nicknames in the earlier Dapim. Over there, we spoke about the fact that there's actually a third type of nickname. There's a nickname which is negative on the individual. There's a nickname which is negative on his family. And there's a nickname which is neutral. It's just a nickname. So that's where we sit over here, that maybe what he's saying here, v'lo k'rati l'chaveirai b'hachinato v'lo b'hanichato, that he didn't call them any of these nicknames. Not only did he call them these nicknames, he didn't call them nicknames whatsoever. And even if it was in common use, he wasn't willing to use the nickname. And for that reason, it's a schut, because definitely if they are nicknames that are negative, then obviously it makes the person feel bad. But even if there are nicknames that are positive, he might have refused to use nicknames whatsoever. All right, that brings us to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is actually a continuation of the previous Mishnah, because it says, Va'od Amar Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda also added this. In addition to that, he also said this, which is, Beit Knesset Shechariv, the Beit Knesset that was destroyed, Ein Maspidim B'tocho. You can't use the space or the place where the Beit Knesset is destroyed or laying there in ruins. You can't use it to house a hespeid, a eulogy, because it's a large area. It's a great place to get people together, but you may not do that over there. Vein mashilim etocho chavalim, you can't twine, spin ropes in there, because making of ropes requires very, very long or large areas, so that you can stretch the ropes across and you can twist them. Vein porsin etocho mitzudot, you can't open up nets in there. I think when they're opening up the nets, I don't think it's to capture animals, but I think it's to make the nets. Again, we need a large area. Vein shotchin al gago peirot, and you can't put fruits on its roof to dry them out. Vein osim oto kapendaria, can't make it into a shortcut, shenemar, because the pasuk says in the tochacha, vashimoti et migdashchem, that I'm going to destroy your migdashim. Kedushatan af shehen shomemin. Even after they're destroyed, it still calls them migdashchem. So that Mikdash Me'at means that there's still Kedusha that is residual in the Beit Knesset even after it is destroyed. Alu bo asavim, if it becomes overgrown, lo yitlosh, do not clean it up, don't mow the lawn, mipnei agmat nefesh, because it'll cause people to feel a certain amount of shame and pain about the fact that the shul now looks like this, and maybe that will trigger them to, or facilitate them taking action. That's what Rashi says over here. We don't simply want people to feel bad. We want them to feel bad and then do something about it. So that's what it means. Shema yivakshu rachamim shiachzeru l'kadmuto. The least, at least they could do is daven, to say maybe the shul will be rebuilt. Or maybe they can do more than that in order to ensure that it's rebuilt. But we don't mind the fact that it's overgrown, because that pulls at their heartstrings, and that's fine. We're okay with that. So over here you have Rabbi Yehuda saying that you may not sell a shul to be used for all of these different items here. The question which is, didn't Rabbi Yehuda just say before that you can sell it generically as a chatzer, and then the buyer can do as he pleases with it? So why all of a sudden here does Rabbi Yehuda come along and have a whole list of items that you're not allowed to sell it for? He was the one who was makil in the previous Mishnah. No, it's a different case. You would have thought it has the same din. I mean, whether you sold it or whether it's destroyed, that should remove the Kedusha from the Beit Knesset. Meaning that if you sell it, the Kedusha now transfers onto the money, or possibly we can get rid of that as well. We had the opinions yesterday with regards to that. And once a Mikdash is destroyed, that also should remove the Kedusha. Because unlike the Beit HaMikdash has two forms of Kedusha. As a form of Kedusha, as a bayit, as a makom kadosh, but it also the land, the area on which it sits, is Eretz Kadosh, or Makom Kadosh, and that's why we have arguments about the permanence of the Kedusha by the Beit Mikdash. That's not true by a shul or Beit Midrash. The Kedusha exists because of the building. It doesn't exist, the location, the place itself is not Kadosh. It's simply the building that's Kadosh, because it's Tashmishei Kedusha, something that's used for Kedusha. It's used to daven in, it's used to learn in, and that's what grants it the Kedusha. So you would think if it was destroyed, that would also remove the Kedusha. But Rabbi Yehuda is suggesting over here is that if it's destroyed, it still has its Kedusha, and you may not do any of these items. So the way that Tosafot reconciles these two statements of Rabbi Yehuda is that in the previous Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda does have a requirement that you sell it generically, but generically lechatzer. If you sold it for any other reason, it wouldn't work. You have to sell it lechatzer. And in continuing in that thought process over here, he says, and another chumrah, quote unquote, that Rabbi Yehuda has is, not only when you sell it, you have to sell it lechatzer, but if it is destroyed, then you may not do these items in the shul that was destroyed.
So Tan Rabbanan, batei knesiot, einu egim behen kalut rosh. When it comes to batei knesiot, you can't act frivolously, you can't act in an inappropriate manner in them. Now, as Rashi says now, the Gemara puts a colon now. Puts a colon and says, what does it mean, kalut rosh? Ein ochlim behen, you're not allowed to eat in them. Vein shotin behen, you're not allowed to drink in them. Vein ne'otin behen, you can't adorn yourself, you can't dress yourself in the shul. Vein mitalin behen, you can't just hang out in the shul. Vein nechnasin behen bechama b'pnei chama, you can't use them as shelter from the sun. U'gishamim b'pnei gishamim, or shelter from the rain. Vein maspidin behen hespeid shal yachid, and you're not allowed to have a eulogy of an individual inside of the shul. Aval, what can you do in a shul? Korin behen. Bishonim behem, you can learn Mikra, you can learn Tanakh. Shonim behem, you can learn Mishnayot. Umaspidim behen hespeid shal rabim. And you can also give a hespeid that is of the public type of hespeid. So now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai, when is that true? Biyishuvan. When the Beit Knesset is still extant, it's still functioning. Aval b'churbanan, if it's destroyed, minichin otan, v'olin behen asavim. Then you leave it, and you let the grass overgrow, v'loit losh, and you shouldn't uproot it, mipnei agmat nefesh, so it pulls on people's heartstrings, causes people grief, anguish, the fact that this is what the shul looks like. But it says, asavim, mandakar shmayu. Why does Rabbi Yehuda come off talking about grass, when the Tanakh had said nothing about grass? But it says, chesurei mechsera, that bright is missing a couple words, transition words, which is, v'achitani. Umechabdinotan, umarbitzinotan. So you have to give kavod to them, which means that you clean them, you sweep them. Umarbitzinotan means that you sprinkle water to settle the dust in them. Kidei shelo yalu behen asavim. In order that things don't grow there, meaning that you take care of the Beit Knesset so things don't just grow in the Beit Knesset. Samar Yehuda, ematai. When is that true that you take care of the Beit Knesset and you make sure that no grass grows there? That's biyishuvan. That's when they're still extant. When they're in use. Aval b'chur banan, minichunotan le'alot. You let it grow. Alu behem asavim. And when it does grow in, lo itlosh, you can't take it out. Mipnei agmat nefesh. Because we want that to be pain, we want the suffering. So people are awakened by that, and they try to do something to rectify the situation. Now we have a very important statement, which is, Amar Rabbi Asi, batei knesiot shebavel, al tanai hei nasuyin. The shuls in Bavel are built on condition. The afal pigain, and even though they're built on condition, ain't no agim behen kalut rosh. You still can't do frivolous or non-serious items there. Umaynihu. And what is that? Cheshbonot. Accounting, or basically business. You can't talk about business, you can't be involved in business when you're in this shul. That's inappropriate. And it doesn't belong in a makom kadosh, a makom that's designated for learning and tefillah. So now, what does this tnai do? What does this condition do to help you? So here you have a machloket ha-rishonim. It's actually a three-way machloket in the rishonim, or parties of the rishonim, as to how to deal with this. You have the shita of the Tosafot over here. Tosafot over here says that the tnai only helps for when it's destroyed. As long as it's extant, it's in use, the condition does absolutely nothing for you. The only thing that tnai does is that when it's destroyed, or when it falls apart later on, then that tnai helps you to get rid of the problem of kedusha. Now Tosafot explains why that's true. It says, v'davka lotan shebavel. It only works for the shuls in Bavel. V'hani tnai sharei le'eid ba goel b'mehera b'yameinu, because when the Redeemer comes speedily in our times, tifka kedushatan. They're going to lose all their kedusha, because everybody's going to leave. Aval lotan shebert Yisrael lo mahani tnai. But for those shuls in Eretz Yisrael, the conditions don't help. Sherei kedushatam le'olam kayemet. Their kedusha is permanent. And since their kedusha is permanent, therefore, the tnai does not help whatsoever for those shuls in Eretz Yisrael. So Tosafot, again, suggests over here that the benefit of the tnai is only in helping out when it's destroyed, not helping out when it's still in use. In addition to that, you have to ask now, based on Tosafot, is, well, if a tanai helps, then why did Rav Ashi tell Ravina before? Ravina had a tell of a Beit Knishta. He had a destroyed Beit Knesset on his property, and he asked Rav Ashi if he can use it, and Rav Ashi says, no, you have to go to the Zayin Tuvei Yair and the Mamad Anshei Yair. Why do you have to do that?
over here you see that you don't have to do that simply by having a Tanai, and it seems that the Tanai is automatic in the shuls in Bavel, then it would go away as soon as it was destroyed. So the Tosafot here gives an answer which is similar to the Rambam and the Rosh's Shita that I spoke to you about yesterday, which is that when you sell the shul, the Kedusha transfers over to the money. And then when you get the permission of Zayin Tov Ve'Yair plus the Ma'amad Anshei Yair, two things happen according to Rambam and the Rosh. One is that the money loses its Kedusha. And number two is you can now use the Makom of the Beit Knesset even for Tashmishei Gnai, even for something that is not so dignified. And that's what Tosafot says over here, exactly that. That he says that Zriya is a type of Gnai, activity of Gnai. And therefore, Habikalud Rosh Biyoter V'Agmat Nefesh Shumachi Asur Avilu B'Churbana. And therefore, it would be Asur even after the shul is destroyed, if it were not for the fact that he bought it from the Zayin Tov Ve'Yair, B'Mamad Anshei Yair. So Tosafot says that Tanai only helps shuls in Bavel, and it only helps once they are destroyed. So that's the Shita of the Tosafot, that's the Shita of the Rosh. The Shita of the Rashi, which you can see over here, Rashi says, what does the Tanai do? Amanach Yishtam Shuban. Tanai helps for a shul in use. And the Or HaZeruah also says that even b'yishuvan, that the Tanai helps you and gives you the right to utilize them for whatever you so see fit. Ran. And the Rashba claim that even b'churbanan, the Tanai doesn't help. The Tanai doesn't help at all. Ela midochak. If you're in a difficult situation where you're pressured to take care of something and you need to utilize the shul for non-davening purposes, for instance, feeding large numbers of aniyim, taking care of a large number of aniyim who need a place to sleep. So in that instance, the Tanai will help you and allow you to utilize it for these types of mitzvot or for these types of items. So the Tanai doesn't help when it's around, when the shul is alive and running. It doesn't help when it's b'churbano, when it's destroyed. It only helps from the perspective if you're in a bind and you need to do something with the shul, that we allow you to do it because of the Tanai in Bavel. Those are the three different approaches as to what it means that Batei Knesiot of Bavel have a Tanai built into them. And even with that Tanai, you can't be Noe Kalut Rosh. You can't just treat them as Kalut Rosh, because even though they're not getting to the full level of Kedusha, still Kalut Rosh would be considered to be inappropriate. The Bar Halacha brings down a question with regards to what happens if you have a self-terminating shul, that you use a certain location for a shul for temporary time and you have a sense of when it's going to end. You say, I'm using this for the shul until this and this time. So the Bar Halacha says, number one, that doesn't have Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. It's clear that doesn't have Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. Kedushat Beit HaKnesset is permanent. It's something there is designated for that purpose and it's going to be there for the duration. The fact that it self-terminates or it has an end to it, almost by definition makes it that it's not going to be a shul. But he also says, in addition to that, it may not attain any form of kedusha. So that has two implications. One is that when you're davening there, you're not davening inside of a shul. So if you daven a minyan in someone's house, in a temporary location, a breakaway minyanim that they have, you're probably not davening in a shul. Probably doesn't have the kedusha of a shul. And number two is, if you don't have kedushat Beit Knesset, then you may not have the restriction of kalud rosh. But the Bar Halacha says, despite that fact, he says that one should not be Noe Kalud Rosh, and should be Makpid on certain levels of decorum and Kalud Rosh within those areas, and you shouldn't be talking about business and other items if people daven there, even though that location never attains Kedushat Beit HaKnesset. Now what's interesting is that Rambam, when he codifies this halacha, does not distinguish between Batei Knesiot in Bavel and Batei Knesiot in Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't bring this issue of Tanai down in the Mechirat of a shul. When you sell the shul, we talked about how it works and the mechanism by which it works, according to the Rambam. But there he doesn't mention l'alocha, this idea that the Batei Knesiot Shebavel were built out tonight, which should help you in those situations. He doesn't mention that at all. Amar Ravasi, Beit HaKnesset Shemechashvim Bo Cheshbonot. If you have a shul in which they conduct calculations, accounting, business transactions, or they speak about business in there, Malinin Bo Et Amet, then they're going to end up leaving a dead body there. Where it says, Milinin Sachadatcha? What do you mean? You have to put a mate there overnight? Losagi de lav hochi? I mean, it's not enough. You can't go without putting a mate into the shul? Elosof, shialino bo mate mitzvah. No. That is the promise. That if, since you misused it, or you do not treat the kedusha properly, then in the end, shialino bo mate mitzvah. You're going to end up having people passing away, who have no relatives to bury them,
and now you're going to have to deal with them inside of the shul. So it's basically a midah keneged midah. If you do not uphold the kedusha of the Beit Knesset, it'll be ruined by the fact that you talk divrei chol, or you engage in activities that are not appropriate for the Beit Knesset. So Hashem says, midah keneged midah, I'm going to have the mate mitzvah, I have to come to the shul. And since you have the mate mitzvah on the shul, that's a pegiah on the kavod of the shul. It's something that you wouldn't want, you wouldn't expect. And that lowering of the status of the shul is the midah keneged midah for the way that you treated the shul. And now, ve'eni otin ben, you're not allowed to adorn yourself, dress yourself in the shul. Amarova, chachamim v'tamidehem mutarin. When it comes to the chachamim and their students, it's mutar. Damar Rabbi Shu ben Levi, my bey rabbanon. Why is a Beit Midrash known as the Bay Rabbanan, the house of the Rabbanan? Because it's Beit HaDerabbanan. It's as if it's their house. So since it's their house, that's what I said yesterday, even though a Beit Midrash might have a higher level of Kedusha than a Beit Knesset, on the other hand, a Beit Midrash has certain dispensations because of the fact that it's the Bayit of the Rabbanan. If it's the Bayit of the Rabbanan, it's a place where they're going to live. That's where they can experience life. If that's the case, they can sleep there, they can eat there, they can do certain activities that would otherwise be asur in a shul, or maybe even a Beit Midrash. But because this is theirs, that's why they are mutar to engage in these activities in the Beit Midrash. Now that is in distinction to a Beit Knesset. Even though the Gemara here is talking about a Beit Knesset in the Braita, over here the Gemara talks about a Beit Rabbanan, which is a Beit Midrash. So everybody agrees that that's true by a Beit Midrash. Again, you should try not to do it. We'll see that in the Shulchan Aruch in a second. But with regards to a Beit Knesset, most hold that it has no relevance to a Beit Knesset, because a Beit Knesset is a different category totally. Okay, you can't use them for shelter. Like this incident with Ravina Rav Adar Bar Matno. They were standing there and asking questions of Rava. Ata zilcha demitra. This downpour came. Ayli the Beit Knishta. So they hopped into the shul to get out of the rain. So I'm right. Hi, Dalin in the Beit Knishta. Rava says, I just want you to know, the fact that we jumped into the shul, la mishu mitra. It's not because of the rain. I would have stayed outside. If it was just because of the rain, I would have stayed outside. Ella, mishum deshmaita ba'itziluta kiyoma distena. Because when you are involved, engaged in halachic discourse, one needs a clear mind, like the day of Istana. And here the translation, the day of Istana, is a day where the northerly wind is blowing, and it's sunny and bright. It's a clear, perfect day. So that you need your clear mind, like that type of clear day. So I'm going to lay the braid the Rav of the Ravashi. He itzrich lay the inish, the mikri gavro mi beit knishta mai. If a person has to call someone out of the shul, what's the din? So what's the question here? Problem is that you're not allowed to go into the shul unless you're going in there for the purposes of kedusha, the purposes of the shul. So if you go in there to daven, that's one thing. But here you're going in there solely for your benefit, which is to get this individual out from the shul. So I'm going to lay, if he's a young tamar chacham, lema hilchata. Let him say over halacha. Let him learn halacha. V'tanohu, lema matanitin. If he is a person who learns Mishnayot and knows the Tanaic works, let him say something from the Mishnah. V'karohu, lema psuka. If he's a person who learns Tanakh, let him say a pasuk. V'lo, if he doesn't have any of these, lema leili yinoka imali psukech. They should say to one of the young children, tell me what pasuk you are learning. Inami nishai purta v'nikum. Or a person should sit down for a moment, and then get up and then continue on their way. By sitting down, you accomplish a mitzvah because there's a mitzvah to sit in shul. Ashrei yoshvei veitecha. So there's a mitzvah or there's some sort of positive item associated with sitting in the shul. And therefore, when you sit down, that's enough of a mitzvah or a reason to go into the shul. And then you can do whatever you need to do after that. Right now, umaspidin behen hespech rabim. The Brita says you're allowed to have eulogies of public or large gatherings. Hechi dami hespech rabim. What is the eulogy of a rabbim? So Mechavi Rav Chista, so Rav Chista looked over him, gave a point. Kegon Hesbeda Dekai Be Rav Sheshet. A eulogy in which Rav Sheshet is present. Now Rav Sheshet, it's not a eulogy for Rav Sheshet. It may not even be that Rav Sheshet is speaking there, but it's a relative of his. And since he's going to be present there, everybody's going to come. And since so many people are going to come, the only proper place to gather the people together is in the Beit Knesset. It's the only building that's big enough for that. In addition, since this is a person who has public stature, then maybe it's appropriate that they go into the shul, which is a public building. And then the same was reciprocated by Rav Sheshet. Mechavi Rav Sheshet, gon esbeid edukai bei Rav Chista. Say esbeid, a eulogy in which Rav Chista made an appearance or was in attendance. Rafram Aspida Lekalate Bebek Nishta. Rafram gave a eulogy for his daughter-in-law in the shul. Amar Mishumi Kara Didi Udemito. It's because of my honor and the honor of the woman, my daughter-in-law. Since my honor and her honor are going to bring out the large crowds, Ate Kuliyama, everyone's going to come, and therefore we need the large space of the shul. Rabbi Zeira Safte Lahomi Rabbanim Bebek Nishta. Rabbi Zeira gave a eulogy for this individual in the shul. Amar Imishum Yikara Didi. Imishum Yikara Demita. I did it because either because of my honor people are showing up, or because of the honor of the mate. Ate Kuliyama, you're going to have large crowds, and since you're going to have large crowds, the only way to do it properly is to do it inside of the shul.
So now when the Shulchan Aruch codifies this halacha in Siman Kufnan Aleph, Sif Aleph, Batei Knesiot u'batei Midrashot einu hagim behen kablut rosh, kagon, skolk, vitul, v'sicha, b'teila, unnecessary chatter, v'ein ochlin v'shotin behen, can't eat and drink in them, v'lo mikashtin behen, v'lo mitailin behen, v'lo nichnasin behen, b'chama b'pnei hachama, g'shamim b'pnei hachamim. So that's all of these items that we just mentioned, the brayta above. V'talmid chachamim v'talmidehem mutarim lechov lishtot behem bidochak, because there it's necessary. Now, the Ramoah says on that, v'yishomrim, the Beit HaMidrash, ashfilu shalom idochak shari. Then in a Beit HaMidrash, since it is their home, even if it's not a dochak, they're allowed to do that because that's their natural arena. Versus the shul, where they have to treat it with a little different respect because it's a makom tefillah, not the makom where they're learning all the time. V'im mechashvim ehem cheshbonot, no business accounting done in them. Ilayim keim shel mitzvot, unless it's for a mitzvah. Ve'in masmidim hem, and you can't have a hespeid in them. Elim kein yeh hespeid lechad migdolei ha'ir, unless it's for someone who is a leader of the city. Shekol b'nei ha'ir mitkabzim v'ayin lehespeido, that all the people of the city would come and hear that. Ve'im tzarich likanes behem letzorcho, if a person does have to go in there for their own purposes, kagon likro ala adam, to call somebody out, ikanes v'ikarei ma'at or yomar devar shmua, he should read a little bit of psukim, say something over in halacha, and then call him, so it doesn't look like you're going in for your own benefit, your own purposes. Should sit a little bit and then go out, because sitting in there is a mitzvah. Then in Sif Gimel he says, you're not allowed to sleep in a shul, afilu shinat arai, even a doze and little nap. Aval bebeit midrash mutar, and the Beit Midrash is mutar, again, for the same reasons that we saw that distinction between a Beit Knesset and a Beit Midrash. And then in Sif Yud he says, afilu lachar shechorvu, adayin heim bekdushatan. Ukshayim shenu agim ben kavod bishuvan, kach nu agim bechorbanan, chutz mikibud viribut. So you have the same status of dusha and necessary kavod for a shul in its destroyed state as it is in its built state, except for the fact that you don't have to clean it up and take care of it. V'imalu behem asavim, if grass or it becomes overgrown, tolshim otam v'nichim otam bimkoman. You pull it out, you weed it, but you leave it in the place, mishum agmat nefesh. Kadei shira'am v'tayir ruchah mishtadu libnotam. So they'll see this, and that will compel them to rebuild it or do something about it. And then in Sifyud Aleph, im bishat binyan beit ha'knesset hitnu alav lehishtamesh bo, they establish a tenai condition in it, mutar lishtamesh bo bechurbano. That's like the Balei HaTosafot. You're allowed to use it after it becomes destroyed. Aval biyishuvo, when it's still settled, lo mahani tnai. The tnai doesn't help at all. Vafilu bechurbano, latish mish miguneh, for something that is beneath the dignity of the location, kagon zriah, which was the case of Ravina, becheshbonot sharabim, or business dealings, lo mahani tnai. That tnai does not help because that, similar to what we saw in the Tosafot, is not allowed even with the condition built into it. That's only true in Chutzlaretz. The tnai does not help whatsoever. And the Mishnah Berurah qualifies that statement of the Shulchan Aruch that's following the sheet of the Tosafot and says, that's only true to do certain things with the Beit Knesset that the tnai doesn't help when it's built, like eating and drinking in there, or going in for shelter to there. Because those are items that are not appropriate for the shul of other shar tashmishim mahani tnai, but for other tashmishim that tnai helps. And then he says, take a look in the Ber Halacha, where he gives the different shitot that we mentioned before with regards to tnai.
Ishlakish sapte da'awu tzurma mirabona. Ishlakish gave a eulogy for this young Talmud Chacham.
The Shchiach Ba'are de Yisrael, he used to spend a lot of time in Eretz Yisrael learning. Davi Tani Hilchota Bekav Dalet Shuroto. He used to teach Halachot Mishnayot on 24 rows of students. So when he passed away, he says, Amar Vai Chasra Aro de Yisrael Gavra Rabo. Says, whoa, Eretz Yisrael has just lost a great one. So now, how David Tani Hilchota Sifra Sifrei Mitosefta? So this individual who used to learn all of these items, these are all Tanaic works, and they are more towards the halachic side of the Tanaic works. So Hilchota Sifra V'Sifrei V'Tosefta V'Shochiv, and he passed away. Atu V'Amrule the Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, they came to speak to Rav Nachman. He said, Lispidei Mar, can you give a eulogy for him? I'm like, Hechi Nispidei, hi. How am I going to give a hespe for this individual? Tzano D'Male Sifra D'Chaser. He's just a basket full of books. So he has all these books, but he's really missing the key element, which is, not only do you need the Mishnayot, not only do you need the Yediot, but you need to have that Yediah and then do something with the Yediah. And so that doing something with the Yediah is Talmud, is learning the Gemara, reconciling Mishnayot, asking questions from one to the other. And therefore I couldn't give him a eulogy. So when it says, Tachazi ma ben tkifei da'ar de Yisrael, le chaside de Bavel. Look at the difference between the great ones of Eretz Yisrael. That reference is Reish Lakish. The Gemara tells us that Reish Lakish would not shake or talk to anybody in the shuk, because as soon as Reish Lakish spoke to you, ultimate Ne'manut. You were given Ne'manut because Reish Lakish spoke to you. That's how great his stature was and his reputation. So you have Takifid the Eretz Yisrael, the strong ones of Eretz Yisrael, look at them, versus the Chasidim, those that were righteous, generous in Bavel. Look at the difference between them. Reish Lakish is from Eretz Yisrael. Nachman Yitzchak is from Bavel. Reish Lakish goes ahead and gives a hesped for a Tzur Mei Rabbanan. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Yitzchak refused to give a eulogy for him. That's what the Gemara says. Look at the contrast between those of Eretz Yisrael, even though they were tougher and they were more difficult individuals, still, when it came down, push comes to shove, he was the one who did the eulogy versus Rav Nachman Yitzchak, who was a softer type, who was refused to do the eulogy. It's not hotam. We have a Mishnah over there. The Mishnah is in Avot, the Perek Alpha Mishnot. Udishmesh betaga chalaf. The one who utilizes the crown should pass away. Tani Reish Lakish, probably can't be Tani because Reish Lakish is not a Tano. More likely it is Amar Reish Lakish. So now Tani Reish Lakish or Amar Reish Lakish, Zamishtamesh b'mi shishone halachot. This is when you utilize someone to help you who learns halachot, meaning someone is a Talmud Chacham. When you utilize a Talmud Chacham, that is Dishmesh betaga chalaf. Vamarula, lishtamish inish b'manda tani arba'a, v'lo lishtamish b'manda matnei arba'a. That if you have a choice, better to utilize an individual who's only learnt for Sdarim of Mishnah, than to use someone who is teaching that same number of Masechtot, four Masechtot. So it's better to utilize someone who's just learning, versus someone who's also learning and teaching. Ki hada Reish Lakish, like this incident by Reish Lakish. Hava Azil Ba'urcha, he was going along the way, Mata Urkama Demaya. He bumped into a pool of water, a large puddle, and now he had to traverse it. So Atahu Gavra. So this individual came along, Arkavea Katve, picked him up on his shoulders and walked him through the water. Become Aberle, he was taking him across. Amale, Kareit, did you learn Chumash Tanach? Amale, Kareina, I did. Tanait, did you learn Mishnayot? Did you learn the Tanaic works? He says, Taneino, Arba Sidre Mishnah. I learned four starim of Mishnah. Samale, Psalta Lachar Arba Ture. You hewed for yourself four pillars or rocks of stone. B'ta'anta Bari Lakish Akatvech. And now you're carrying Reish Lakish on your shoulders? This is beneath your dignity. Shadi Bar Lakisha B'maya. Throw Reish Lakish into the water. And get rid of him. I mean, he was saying about himself to this guy. Get rid of this guy, Reish Lakish. He's taking advantage of someone. He's utilizing someone to Talmud Chacham. So he says back to him, Amalei Nichali, it's worthwhile for me, Dashmin and Lamar, because then I can ask things of you, and I can hear a Divrei Torah from you. So he says, Ihochi, Reish Lakish says, that's why you're here, and that's why you believe. Gomer Mine Hal Milto. Let me teach you one thing. That Amar Rabbi Zera, Benot Yisrael, Hein Yechmiro Atzman, Shafil Rotibat, Dam kechardal yeshvot alav shiva nikiim. This is really from the Gemara in Nida. Gemara in Nida over there discusses the transition from the din d'oraita of Nida to what our practice is today. This is the final stage of it, which is this. Afilu ro'ot tibat dam kechardal yeshvot alav shiva nikiim. That is min haTorah. We've discussed this a number of times, that if a woman sees dam, she's a nida right away, and she counts 7 days. Doesn't matter whether she's sing dam, not sing dam, she counts 7 days. At the end of the seventh day, if the dam stops coming, then she's done with the nida. She goes to the mikveh, she's done in terms of her being a nida. Then she then enters into the yemei ziva. These are the interim days between the cycle of nida to cycle of nida. They're known as the 11 days of yemei ziva. During those 11 days of yemei ziva, then if she has a sighting of dam, the first time is she's shomeret yom keneged yom. The second time she's also shomeret yom keneged yom. The third time she has a sighting, then she becomes a zavah gdola. And a zavah gdola has to have shiva nikim before she becomes Torah and has to bring a korban. So now, what the practice came to be, which is what we do today, is that in the time of the Gemara and the din d'oraita, when you have a sighting of dam, and you're nida for just those 7 days, and then it's all done, it's finished until the next cycle. So what the Chachamim, or what the Bnot Yisrael ended up doing, is that they were machmir on themselves to claim that they are a Zavah Gdola anytime they see dam. Anytime they see any dam, they assume they're a Zavah Gdola, because there's a possibility, and we saw this in the Mishnayot, in different places, that a nida can lose track of her count. If she loses track of her count, we won't know which days are Yemei Nida, which is which days are Yemei Ziva, that are in the interim days. So since you won't know which one is which, or you got confused, when she sees even a Tibat Dam, we can assume that maybe it's in Yemei Ziva, and now she is continuing to be Tamei, because she ruined her Shiva Nikim. So now, the Gemara says that the Benot Yisrael were Achmir, that anytime they saw Dam, they set Shiva Nikim automatically, and therefore we wouldn't have any questions, because every time you do Shiva Nikim, whether you were a Nida or not a Nida, you last more than 7 days. You automatically have more than 7 days, so you're definitely over the period of Nida, and you get the Shiva Nikim. So therefore, if you're a Zavah Gdola, then you have a Shiva Nikim, and there's no question as to what her status is. Tosfot asks the question over here, the Rishonim ask it in Nida as well, is how can she ever have a Tibat Dam and turn into a Zavah Gdola? A Zavah Gdola requires sightings for 3 days. So Tosfot says maybe she didn't see the sightings the first 2 days, and we're choshish, and that when she has a Tibat Dam Chardal, that is a third sighting. That's one thing he says. The other thing he says is, it's actually a possibility that a Tibat Dam could ruin a Zayin Nikim. If a woman saw on her seventh day of Shiva Nikim, she saw Dam, that would be okay the entire Shiva Nikim, and she'd have to start counting again. So you see there that one sighting of Dam can create a situation in which you need to start new Shiva Nikim. And so based on that, we also start new Shiva Nikim every time she has a sighting of Dam, as if it's the seventh day of her count of Shiva Nikim from a Zavah Gdola that she's trying to finish off, and she has that sighting of Dam, and the size of it is like that seventh day of the Shiva Nikim, and because that would ruin it, therefore we also think that way, and we assume that she has to wait Shiva Nikim until she becomes Tehora. And that's the practice of the Nidot, the women that we have today. So now he says that's what he taught him, this din. And then, Tana de Be'eliyahu, kol lashon halachot muftach lo shu ben olam haba. Anybody who learns halachot is promised that he will be a ben olam haba. Shenemar halichot olam lo, that the walking the ways of the world are his. Atukah halichot el halachot, that the halachot bring him alo amlo, give him a world unto his own. So therefore, a person is muftach shu ben olam haba if he is learning halachot, if he's reviewing halachot b'chol yom, on each day. Okay, with that, we're going to stop over here.